This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from the office of East Baton Rouge Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome, and the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. And before we get started with Foster Campbell, we do want to note the state Supreme Court ruled Friday on a 4-3 vote to allow the city of St. George to move forward with plans to incorporate, a monumental decision for Baton Rouge and possibly the end of a decade-long battle over the creation of the new city. Laura Nicholson wrote a fine story in Saturday's Advocate. One vote to spare, and we will see what happens, but the new city will include at least 86,000 residents across a 60-square-mile area, and as a result of that, there will be some adjustments, as you can imagine. The East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor's Office will stay the same, as will other parish-wide elected officials, and some people, I'm sure, were unaware of that, that Mayor Broome is still the mayor for all the parish, including St. George. But St. George becomes possibly the fifth-largest city in Louisiana. So that is something, and with those numbers being taken out of the Baton Rouge population, in a lower crime area, Baton Rouge quite likely will soar to number one or two or three in the country, unfortunately, in the rate of murders per capita in the country. Even though nothing has really changed, the proportion of those who are unfortunately being killed in the new area, which will be much smaller, will be higher. So we will talk about that in the days to come, as in tomorrow we're scheduled to hear from the mayor, and also this week we should hear from her major opponent, Ted James. But Foster Campbell is here, 22 years now on the Public Service Commission, after 27 years in the Louisiana Senate, one of the most enduring politicos in North America. And he has been fighting the fight for years about an oil processing tax. And Friday on this program, Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser gave his endorsement. And some would probably say, well, Billy Nungesser was, of course, the son of Billy Nungesser Sr., who was Dave Treen's right-hand person. And Dave Treen was the first person who suggested this many years ago with the so-called Quell tax. And now I'm sure Nungesser, who admitted that he has accepted some of Jeff Landry's initiatives that is a courtesy to the governor, now he will perhaps be working on Jeff Landry to use this measure as a way to alter the tax structure in Louisiana. We are talking about billions of dollars if this were to pass. And in the old days, it came close a few times in the Senate when Foster Campbell was a member. But since then, if anything, the oil and gas industry has gained momentum and gained traction at the Capitol. And Foster Campbell, there are those who say that this is a fool's errand, that it won't happen, and there's no real reason to continue to push for it. But I know you differ. You believe that it could happen, especially if it went to the went to a vote of the people of Louisiana. Your thoughts where we are right now on this?
Well, I'm glad to see Mr. Nungesser come out. That helps. He's a lieutenant governor. Let me just say this. Governor Landry's calling for a constitutional convention, and he ought to put this in his call. I would challenge him to do that. Let's hear the facts. The facts bear it out. People have to realize that the oil companies have had their way in Louisiana forever and still have their way. Just last year, Exxon made $36 billion. Shell made $28 billion. ConocoPhillips made $11 billion. Chevron made $21 billion. A lot of that oil comes right through the state of Louisiana, and we don't get a dime. Here's a simple answer. If you have a drilling operation and you drill on the coast in Louisiana, off the coast in the state of Louisiana, there's a severance tax that you pay if you drill on Louisiana land. You pay 12.5%. But past the 3-mile limit out in the Gulf of Mexico, they pay nothing. They pay the zero. And that's where all the oil is. We're pretty much out of oil in Louisiana, onshore. But out in the Gulf of Mexico, where it all comes to the state of Louisiana, and it's called all kind of damage to the state on the coast, et cetera. We understand that. I know they provide jobs. But we could raise billions of dollars, cut the severance tax for the Louisiana oil people, cut it in half to 6%, or cut it out completely, charge roughly 5 or 6% for the people out in the Gulf of Mexico, the Chevron, the Exxon that made $36 billion, make them pay a tax on offshore oil that comes through the state of Louisiana. We would raise the money that we need. Now, get this. Everybody's talking about getting rid of the income tax. You want to get rid of the income tax? Ask the major oil companies to pay something on foreign oil. We have 75,000 miles of pipeline now in the state of Louisiana, more going in every day. We're the shipping point of America. All the oil that comes up the Mississippi River comes to our right through us. They can't move the Mississippi River. Talking about, well, we'll move. They're not moving. These refineries, nobody really wants a refinery. They're not the cleanest thing in the world. We accept them. A lot of good jobs. But we need to be compensated. There's no one listening to your show today. I challenge anybody. No one listening to your show today can tell me how Louisiana can have all these natural resources we've been blessed with, and we're the poorest state in America.
All right, hold tight.
I challenge you to come over with it.
Well, and yeah. General Honoré, not so long ago on this show, he was actually giving us a little bit of credit. I think we're behind Mississippi, so we're only the second poorest state in America, but we are the third largest energy producer, and we have this situation in which we're the breadbasket for the country with the biggest port system in the country, and we have a presence of the oil and gas industry that is immense, and yet the people are poor. But those plants, as you know, provide jobs, and they're good-paying jobs, and they've helped the lives of people for a couple of generations at least, Foster Campbell. And there are those who make the case that, look, we got a problem, but it's too late now. It's too late, and the last thing we want to do is run out of the state, the biggest industry in the state. How do you answer them?
It's never too late. All we need is some politicians with some courage. It's not too late. Politicians know. They know the way to get out of this gar hole that we're in, as they say in the country. We're in a gar hole. We're not catching white perch. We're catching gar. And we need to get out of the gar hole. And the best way to do it is for the politicians in the state to represent the people. The good thing about this processing tax, you would put it where you could remove it from the Constitution. The line that says that we can only tax in-state oil. It says you can't tax out-of-state oil, foreign oil. Get rid of that and say that we can tax this oil that comes through the state of Louisiana. You raise the money, and first of all, I know these people produce great jobs. The jobs are not going anywhere. Exxon's not going to remove that refinery in Baton Rouge. The refineries up and down the Mississippi River are not going anywhere. Valero just increased the size of their refinery. You don't think they don't think you can pass this because they pretty much own the legislature. They're betting on the come. Hey, we got this. Politicians don't worry about it, but they ought to worry about it. And I would challenge Governor Landry wants to do something remarkable. He wants to do something that he'll be remembered by. The best way to do that is for him to put this in his Constitution Convention is coming up, a proposition to remove the provision in the Constitution that you can only tax in-state oil. Put that in there, pass it in the legislature, and let the people vote on it. Mm-hmm. You know what will happen if you let the people in the state of Louisiana vote whether or not you want to tax offshore oil? It'll pass 75-25. And you hear all the crying and the hollering and everything from the big major oil companies. Oh, you're killing us. You're going to kill us. We won't make $36 billion next year. We'll only make $30
billion. Well,
or whatever.
You and Governor Landry, I'm sure, disagree on any number of things. And if you're a Republican governor, as Jeff Landry is, and you're thinking, well, why would I do something to please Foster Campbell? He didn't vote for me. I'm surmising you didn't. I'm going to go with the people who brought me to the dance. Now, and Landry, to his credit, I believe, since he was supported by the trial lawyers, is backing the suits against the oil companies for the damage done to the coast. But let's say he does what you want. Would you back him? Would you back Jeff Landry?
I would help him every way I could. And first of all, he's all. I wrote. You might remember this in September. I wrote a letter to him. He is not funding the children's U.S. program where they feed children in the summertime. I wrote him a letter and asked him to do that. Bobby Jindal didn't accept any money. He was against it. And Jeff Landry said he was against it. But now he's changed his mind. And he's absolutely right. We ought to feed children in the summertime. It was $71 million coming to the state of Louisiana. Why wouldn't we take the 71? He's making a good decision.
We'll return after this 89.3 second timeout with Foster Campbell. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and we're talking with Public Service Commissioner Foster Campbell. We're going to hit a few topics with him in our remaining time, but we talked about the oil processing tax. And back in the day, I remember some editorial writers of note, seasoned journalists like Carl Redman and John Hill, they voiced, expressed their support for it. Candidates ran for governor on this. Buddy Leach did. Buddy Leach, who was in the oil and gas business, did in 2003. But it has never gotten the two-thirds votes it needs in the Senate or the House, and with the oil and gas industry carrying lots of mojo with a largely compliant legislature, it's a big lift. But it would be billions of dollars, and we are on the brink, it appears, of having a constitutional convention. So Foster Campbell says, put it in the call. Let's see what happens. Here's another one. LSU allowed Shell to influence studies after a $25 million donation and sought funds from other fossil fuel firms. This story was in The Guardian in London and in The Lens in Louisiana, largely ignored everywhere else. For $5 million, the flagship university lets an oil company weigh in on faculty research activities. For $100,000, a corporation can participate in a research study with robust reviewing powers and access to all resulting intellectual property. And those conditions are not just The Guardian or The Lens. They're in a document that LSU circulated to people in the process of seeking money for the oil war school. And Shell donated $25 million to create the Institute for Energy Innovation. The university gave Shell license to influence research and coursework for the university's new concentration in carbon capture. Foster Campbell, LSU is, of course, like everybody else, trying to keep the trains rolling, and we do have a big presence of the oil and gas industry in our state. LSU has one of the best petroleum curricula in the country, petroleum engineers. What do you make of this? Is this bad news, or is this just business as usual?
Let me just say this. The previous, the institute over there, the previous director, not the Mr. Upton, who I talked to Saturday, the previous director, who Mr. Upton took his place, let me just tell you this. I went over to their meeting one time. You tell me if it's any home cooking here. I went to their meeting, and he would let me speak. He had all the oil companies there, and I asked him to speak, and he wouldn't let me speak. Now, what do you think about it? You think that's a little cozy? I think it's sickening that this guy takes all this money, and Shell's glad to give $25 million, and then they can participate. And they'll say everything, just like Exxon did, that through the years, even their president, we don't have any global warming. We're not causing any of that stuff. And now they got religion, and they're talking about cleaning up everything. But for a long time, Rex Tillerson, or whatever his name was, he told his engineers to downplay this, make sure you downplay it. So it's real cozy. It is really, really cozy when big oil companies give all this money to energy studies, and they're going to have a big participant. You think they're going to point them finger? You think they'll point their finger at themselves? I don't. Now, I know LSU needs the money, and that'll be wonderful, but I would hope they get it from independent sources, not from oil companies that are drilling in the Gulf of Mexico that wants all the rules and regulations easy on them. I am 25 million is great, but it's cozy when you get the oil companies and they say, if your letter's correct, I assume it is, if they're asking other people to participate and you will have a say so in it, too cozy. Way too cozy.
877-217-5757 if you'd like to chime in with Foster Campbell. David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. Commissioner, scientists are predicting a summer this year hotter than last year, and the heat will last longer. When everybody turns on their air conditionings to full speed, is the electric grid in Louisiana able to handle it? Will there be brownouts, blackouts, and Republicans?
All right, what about the prospect for the intense weather we are expected to get affecting the power supply?
Well, we're trying. Well, first of all, that's a good question. Second of all, energy just spent $1.9 billion last week. They got a vote 3-2 in the Public Service Commission, which I'm a member. They want to increase the resiliency, and I'm all for that. But what they don't tell you is that, first of all, this $1.9 billion they're going to spend comes right out of the pocket of all the people. And I did not vote for that. Let me be real clear. $1.9 billion energy wanted to spend in North Louisiana from Alexandria to Arkansas, from the Sabine River to the Mississippi River. They only wanted to spend a little, about 10%, $190 million. So $190 million in North Louisiana. The rest of the money you want to spend in South Louisiana. The storms are in South Louisiana, which I understand, but they want the people in North Louisiana to pitch in and pay the same rate as the people in South Louisiana. We don't have the storms up here. Nobody wants to listen to that. North Louisiana is paying a lot of money. We do not have the tornadoes and hope we never do, or the hurricanes at South Louisiana. We're going to pay the same thing. They want us to help fix everything, which is fine. We want to work with them. But I didn't vote for it. I can't saddle the people that I represent, a million people I represent, with a rate increase when we don't have the storms they do in South Louisiana. And somebody, they don't want to talk about it. I tell you what, I wouldn't mind selling North Louisiana Energy because their company. I think that they ought to, because they treat us bad up here. We pay more. They don't want to listen. They say, well, you don't have many people living in North Louisiana. We don't have many people living in North Louisiana as in South Louisiana, but we pay more for our electricity than they do in South Louisiana.
Okay.
It's not fair.
Well, here's another one that a listener has pointed me to, and this one from the Louisiana Illuminator. Lawmakers in our state are considering a bill that could block the construction of a long-planned transmission project delivering electricity from Texas to Mississippi. This is touted as, quote, cheap electricity. Senate Bill 108, sponsored by Senator Alan Seabaugh, Republican from Shreveport, not so far from you, Senator and Commissioner Campbell, has gotten relatively scant attention. It sailed through the Senate, clearing it on a 36-1 vote. What is going on here?
This is a company that the money is coming from Canada, a big fund in Canada. It's been run out of California. They want to come across Louisiana with a new transmission line. Here's the catch. Not one kilowatt hour, not one, goes to the state of Louisiana. They want to cross the state and go to Mississippi. They want the same rights, expropriation rights, that we make other companies go through. They don't want to have to go through all the dedication and stuff that the other people go through. One of their lobbyists told me this. This was done in a public meeting. He said that we have every police jury from the Ouachita River to the Mississippi River that supports this project. I have not heard from one of them, not one. All I hear from is people taking people's land. I don't think you can do it in the Constitution. I think it's unconstitutional, but we can see about it. These people come in, they have a different story every time. I don't think they've been truthful. They don't give us one kilowatt of electricity, and their lobbyists tell me in a meeting with 20 people there We have already contacted all the police juries from Washita River to the Mississippi River, and they're all for it, and I have not gotten one telephone call. I got a call from a gentleman in Delhi, Louisiana. Let me tell you about this gentleman. He owns 80 acres, and he has it in corn. They want to come through the middle of his field with this huge transmission line. And they told him, you can either sign up or we can get this. The Public Service Commission will take the property, which we can't and which we wouldn't. But anyway, here's a little guy with 80 acres, well, not 2,000 acres, 80 acres. He has a cornfield. He told me he has a son and two grandchildren. He wants to leave this farm to them. And all of a sudden, Pattern Energy is coming through saying, we're going to take this land. Here's how much we're giving you for it. And it was below market value. So I have some real problems with these people.
All right, we do have to take a break. We'll spend a few more minutes with the loquacious Foster Campbell, 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Foster Campbell, the Public Service Commissioner of 22 years and former state senator for more than a quarter century. Silas writes, Campbell poses the question of how Louisiana, with vast natural resources, can be so poor and messed up. The answer is easy, continues Silas. Vast natural resources are no guarantee of broad social benefits. In fact, the opposite is usually the case. A few make off with most of the profits. The money is too easy for everyone, and it's too easy to overlook the environmental consequences that come with the exploitation of that resource. Foster Campbell, your response.
I was a teacher. I would give him an A. an A plus. If you were in my class and you wrote that, I would say, sir, you just made an A plus. You're absolutely right. They call that an embarrassment of riches in a lot of countries. Embarrassment of riches. And the problem is we don't have the politicians with the backbones stand up and say, listen, we love you here. We love your jobs. We put up with the pollution, but we understand. You give us great jobs. But you're towing our coast up. You're going to have to pay for it. The next thing you're going to have to do is we're going to want a tax for offshore oil. We're tired of being poor. That guy's put his finger right on it. It's an embarrassment of riches, and the only thing happens there, you have politicians that don't have the courage to stand up against the special interests.
All right.
I would hope that Governor Landry puts this in his call. I think he has the courage to do it. He's standing up against coastal erosion. Stand up against this and ask the foreign oil companies to pay their share. When I say foreign, anybody coming into Louisiana, there's some that come from South Arkansas, they come from East Texas, that is foreign to the state of Louisiana. We could solve our problems, get rid of the income tax. You want to get rid of it? Make the oil companies pay their fair share and see how people will come to Louisiana. The most progressive states in the country, Florida, Texas.
Okay, we're short on time. I've got a few other items the listeners have asked me about. You've opined about the status of the Democratic Party in Louisiana. And your friend Katie Bernhardt, who said she would appear on this show and is playing dodgeball with me, hopefully she will agree, was ousted by Randall Gaines as chair of the party. What's your take on what this means, if anything?
Well, I don't know what it means. I don't know. We'll have to see what Mr. Gaines does. I like Ms. Bernhardt. I think she tried hard to do it. You know, she took the place of a lady that went to the penitentiary for theft. So that's troubling. That's troubling. So the party's in a mess. To be honest with you, I'm the only white Democrat left in the state of Louisiana that represents a large geographical area. And I'm not quitting. I'm staying hooked. I am a Democrat. I believe in the Democratic Party. I believe in some of the things we've come up with, Social Security, minimum wage. I like Lyndon Johnson. I hope everybody liked him that ever has an illness at over 65 years old. He gave us Medicare.
Okay.
So I like the Democratic Party.
I got you. You're going to be a Democrat until the end, but you're right. You're the only white Democrat, and a listener chided me saying that I have said this on the show, that John Bel Edwards might be the last Democrat to win in our state on a statewide basis for a while, but this is a lady, doesn't want her name, from Manny, who's listening online, who says that Foster Campbell won in a district that Donald Trump carried overwhelmingly on the same day. And that was a miracle. How did you do it, Foster Campbell?
I got a lot of people that think I take up for the average guy on the street. I appreciate it. That's exactly what I'm trying to do right now. And I appreciate your show, that you let everybody just talk about what they want to talk about, not just Republicans and not just Democrats, but everybody. And that's why I'm asking Governor Landry. He's got the power now. He has the microphone, and I don't have it. He has it, and he can do something about it. So, Mr. Landry, Governor Landry, please, please get down and think about this, talk to your people, and put this processing tax on the folks, on the oil companies, and let's raise the money and get rid of the income tax. You'll see how many people will come to Louisiana. The Wall Street Journal quotes it all the time. The most progressive states in America do not have an income tax. But you got to replace $4.4 billion in your budget, and you can do it with this tax on foreign oil. It makes good sense. You will be an absolute hero if you do this.
All right.
Will be remembered forever.
We got to be brief, but one caller, I know he's been on the line for a while, Phil in Jefferson. Phil, you're on with Foster Campbell.
Morning, gentlemen. Yes, sir. I hope you understand that the oil ban was lifted in 2014 on selling U.S. oil on the open market. It was a bill in the federal budget that McConnell added, and Obama signed into law, and it's one of the reasons that they're trying to sell our oil out from under us, rather than conserving it and leaving it in the ground where it really needs to stay.
All right. Would you like to respond to Phil? Foster Campbell?
I didn't understand what he said. I'm sorry.
Well, he was talking about what happened in the Obama administration as far as legislation that he believes, I think, is causing some of the issues we're having now. But I think that's a topic for another day. Foster Campbell, always a pleasure to catch up with you. Let's do it again soon.
Thank you very much, and thank you, everybody, for listening. I think you got a good show. I think you're very fair on both sides. Thank you.
Thank you, Foster Campbell. And in studio are two gentlemen with a provocative book, Dead People, Crazy People, Drugs, and Politicians. I've noted that in the recent years, not as many Louisiana politicos have been indicted. Well, Chris Warner and Terry King, they have a book showing some of the major players, mainly in law enforcement, who have run afoul of the law. Terry King's a Watson native, graduate of Southern Mississippi, master's from LSU, and the son of an editor of a statewide newspaper. And Chris Warner, who's been with us a few times, has undergraduate and graduate degrees from LSU, a doctorate from the University of New Orleans. He's the author of many books about sports and politics, and they have collaborated on this. Dead People, Crazy People, Drugs, and Politicians. And the book comes with a warning that politicians lie, cheat, and steal. The contents of this book are hazardous to their career. Terry King, I understand you got a call from the governor the other day. He's reading your book.
Yes, we did. We dropped off 194 copies of it to the legislature in a crazy little stunt that seems to have paid off.
Well, and the governor, of course, as Foster Campbell says, he's got quite a megaphone now. One of the big issues in the state, in fact, today, Scott Sternberg, the noted attorney who is involved in First Amendment cases, he'll be at the Baton Rouge Press Club. He is speaking about this lack of sunlight bill. It basically would gut the state's open records laws. And Chris Warner, you have a chapter along with Terry, Sunlight is the Best Disinfectant. I think conservatives and liberals and moderates, whatever your political persuasion is, can take note from Lee Zurich, the noted reporter in New Orleans. He's benefited, and he testified against this legislation. What happens? What happens if it's passed?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Lee Zurich. Thank you, Jim, for having us, too. It's apropos that you mention him because he testified against the bill when it went to the committee. I saw him on one of the news reports about the bill, and he makes a living off of FOIA requests. You know, he applies his trade by requesting information, documents that he said are owned by the citizens, which I thought was a really poignant statement. That's true. We do own those documents, because many of the emails and correspondence that legislators have between each other are on devices that were bought with taxpayer money, and that's the rub. We really do own their correspondence if they're corresponding on their computers and if they're acting on behalf of the taxpayer. So I agree, I agree with
and Lee, quite sir. Often when there are public records open for review by media people, they report stories, and Andrea Gallo in Sunday's Advocate noted that without those records that were available under the current law, that Ray Nagin would never have been found out, and he would have probably served out his term in New Orleans, but he went to jail, got out early because of COVID. But nonetheless, there's an example of how public records changed the fabric of New Orleans. So why is the legislature going this route, in your judgment?
Well, that is the big question here. Many people have asked me, why are they doing that? And I don't understand it either. I don't think it's something that is more pressing than improving our insurance rates, our roads that need attention, our education system that's failing. And we could continue to go on and on, things that affect our quality of life in a negative way in Louisiana. So this has been a surprise to many people. Mm-hmm. But I believe in the governor, and I believe he's going to get it right. I know he's reached out to Terry and the concerned citizens of St. Tammany, who really wouldn't be so successful putting 30 people in prison in St. Tammany Parish had it not been for records requests.
Well, and St. Tammany has a big focus in this book, and it is the most affluent, most educated parish in Louisiana. And yet there has been, as you note, gobs of misconduct at various levels of St. Tammany government, including a sheriff who was elected 5 times, and this particular sheriff, Jack Strain, was convicted on 4 counts of aggravated rape, 2 counts of aggravated incest, 1 count of molestation of a juvenile, 1 count of sexual battery, 4 life sentences without parole for 4 rape charges, and he was also involved in some other issues that people found fault with. But how could that happen in St. Tammany Parish, Terry, this beacon of light in Louisiana?
Well, I believe one of the big problems there is if you're white, wealthy, and without legal problems, you don't pay attention to what's going on in the community. And that's what was going on in St. Tammany. You had all of this stuff that was happening in the jails and the work release program, which is how we uncovered the sex crimes, was public records, getting that information, and also having inmates turn over information to us.
877-217-5757, a riveting read, Dead People, Crazy People, Drugs, and Politicians. It's about Louisiana politicos who have run afoul of the law. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Terry King and Chris Warner, authors of Dead People, Crazy People, Drugs, and Politicians. It's about Louisiana politicos have gone afoul of the law, primarily in St. Tammany Parish, and Terry has been involved for many years with concerned citizens of St. Tammany. What was the primary motivation for the book?
My wife worked for the coroner in St. Tammany, and he fired her when she refused to commit grant fraud. And we went through the steps of going to the EEOC, and that's when I found out that he was also sexually harassing her and refused to stop. In fact, said he wouldn't stop because he was a doctor and he heals with his hands.
Okay, well, that would get you involved, and I'm glad you didn't mention the person's name. Thank you. But at any rate, Greg Ferries, who many of us in Louisiana remember as the chief of police here, and he lost a close race in 2007 for sheriff to Sid Gotro, he writes the foreword. And Chris, I know you believe that among many law enforcement people who you take exception with, you like Greg Ferries a whole lot. Why?
I don't take exception to really any law enforcement people.
Well,
I
think some, when they go afoul of the law,
well,
you
well,
do.
Of course I would, you know, but they have a difficult job. But I certainly respect Mr. Ferries, and he gave us the idea for the title, the catchy title, in that it's a description of the responsibilities of a coroner in Louisiana. They deal with dead people, crazy people, drugs, and they're politicians. And oddly enough, in Louisiana, the coroner is the only person who can arrest the sheriff, and only for 72 hours.
Really? Well, Ferries writes, the foreword in St. Tammany Parish, he writes, was a sanctuary for New Orleanians with means to own a summer home or frequent its hotels and inns. It's a beautiful place. I was at a nice event in Covington, and most of the people there, of course, are law-abiding, and I'm sure appalled at some of these politicians who've gone awry. But why do we not have better vigilance? For example, Jack Strain was elected 5 times. We're talking a guy who was in office for around 20 years. What compelled him to get away with stuff like this for so long?
He was very well organized with maintaining power. He knew how to grant favors and also to maintain law and order, at least what people thought was law and order. And, of course, he had this seedy side of his life that he had to keep hidden from everybody. But he did, he was masterful at controlling his victims by either employing them or putting them in jail and controlling them there.
And for 20 years he did it. And yes. Then he got his comeuppance, and he's probably never spent another day as a free man. But this is, as we noted, is not some hamlet where people are uneducated and unaware. You would think they would be aware, and he had to have great power to conceal all this for as long as he did.
Yes, he did.
One of the other things that Terry has pointed out, because he and I have sat around, particularly when I started writing the book with him, trying to figure out why, and that's what makes these type of stories so interesting. A true crime story like this involving politicians who rarely get caught, who are protected mm-hmm. amongst their fraternity. You know, this is fascinating. Why do they do this? You know, Peter Galvin was making $300,000 a year. He had a local senator help him pass an obscure bill to set his own salary. He was paying himself for leave time that he was taking, and it was documented on Facebook and brought to light by Lee Zurich, the talented reporter who won the equivalent of the Pulitzer Prize for exposing this corruption. So it's fascinating to watch. And greed took over here, and then it opened the door for Terry and the concerned citizens to see all these other politicians that were committing crimes. And it's interesting because they form complaints, Jim, and when they put a written complaint with proof of criminality in front of the FBI, they have to act.
Okay. The book is Dead People, Crazy People, Drugs, and Politicians from Terry King and Chris Warner. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Jim.
We're joined now by the remarkable journalist, Deborah Ann Roberts. She is a native of Perry, Georgia, graduate of the University of Georgia, and we've seen her and heard her for many years, and she's been involved in various matters away from the small screen. And her latest work is a book, Lessons Learned and Cherished, The Teacher Who Changed My Life. It's a collection of essays and musings from celebrity friends and colleagues who share how teachers changed them. And good morning to you, Deborah Roberts.
Good morning. So happy to be with you, and thank you for that lovely introduction.
Well, you're an easy person to compliment. You've had a storied career, and I'm sure as you have trudged forward, journalism is something that changes on a daily basis, doesn't it?
Oh, isn't that the case? Oh, my gosh. And it's changed so much, so drastically since I entered the profession years ago. Changes all the time. But that's what we love about it, too, because it is changing. And no 2 days are the same. And certainly the stories and the people that I meet and things that I get to do certainly keep me interested and keep me jumping.
Well, through the years when I've interviewed journalists and others, they quite often mention a person or two, but sometimes it's one person who changed their life, and usually that is a teacher. Teachers make the world go round, don't they?
They certainly do, and I have to tell you, it was one of those things that I think I didn't really think about it until I just sat down and thought about it. Anytime I would go out and give a speech or talk about my career or women and empowerment, I would often talk about Mrs. Dorothy Hardy, my sixth-grade English teacher who was tough and no-nonsense and, you know, really demanded excellence. And, you know, when I look back on it, I think that was probably the beginning of my pushing myself and thinking outside the box and reaching for the stars. And, of course, then I went on to have other teachers who I think complimented that, but that's kind of where it began. And coming out of the pandemic and realizing that teachers are right now just so under siege. I mean, just, dealing with so much and not feeling very appreciated and not feeling like the, their profession is regarded in a way that it should be, I thought, why not salute teachers and find a way to remind all of us that, that teachers and that profession really not only matters, but just changes people, can inspire, can change our world. And that's what I'm hoping this book will do.
The book is Lessons Learned and Cherish, The Teacher Who Changed My Life, from Deborah Roberts. And you note that the idea that one of the greatest gifts a teacher can give you is to help change how you see yourself. That's paramount. I think many of the people who've contributed indicate that in their lives.
Yeah, that was what I heard so often, from Oprah Winfrey to, you know, Christy Turlington, the model whose face you would definitely know, Cheryl Lee Ralph, you know, Brooke Shields. So many people talked about how, whether they had insecurities and maybe didn't quite see something, or maybe they thought they had something that may be worthy of, you know, going forward in a big way, a teacher saw something in them that they did not necessarily see and almost validated them. And whether you came from a home like a Jenna Bush Hager, who, you know, from a political dynasty, and her father wasn't president at the time, but he obviously hailed from a father who would become president, and her mother was a librarian, but she had certain insecurities. And it was a teacher who said to her, you could be. And she said she'd never had anybody who said to her, you could be, in that way, and believed in her in that way. And it changed the way she saw herself. And it's just a reminder that teachers hold a very prominent place in our lives for the most part. And we should honor that, and we should remember that.
We talked about how the media world is evolving. Well, the teaching world is too. All the factors in our society that contribute to the way we are adjusting to our lives, they affect teachers perhaps more so than anybody else. What are the major issues you see that are facing educators in our world?
Well, I think, you know, clearly, you know, they're burned out. They're coming out of the pandemic. They have kids who are distracted by cell phones, by, you know, a lack of accomplishment over the last few years. I mean, kids who just have fallen behind academically. So they're already dealing with classrooms that are still dealing with the pandemic. But they also, too, you know, teachers are being asked to, in some places, in some states, to guard their classroom. I mean, you know, they're dealing with the potential for violence. And so teachers are really uptight about that. They certainly don't get the authority to participate. I mean, you know, you think about one of my teachers I talk about is my librarian. Well, we know that, you know, libraries now are the subject of so much debate and book bans, and so teachers don't really have a lot of say. And I think that more than anything else, teachers want some autonomy. They want to participate in the process. You know, they are really very, very low on the hierarchy chain. They don't get a chance to participate. Mm-hmm. In Finland, of all places, in Finland, the Finnish school system not only has highly qualified teachers, but they get a lot of autonomy. There's a lot of satisfaction in that country just alone in the way the curriculum is presented. Teachers are not getting that kind of regard. Their wages, of course, have, you know, kind of stayed stagnant, so they're not really making the money. And what gets me is that teachers don't really care that much about the money. Many of them have second jobs, unfortunately, to try to make life work, but to just not feel that they are being regarded and that they're not having influence and that nobody is respecting their work and that they're being asked to do so much and with so little resources. I think they're just very discouraged right now. And that's one of the biggest problems. They're burnt out and they're discouraged.
Well, next week is National Teacher Appreciation Week, and the book is Lessons Learned and Cherished, The Teacher Who Changed My Life. Quickly, we've got about 30 seconds, but what do you, good question from the listener, what is the key to the staying power of shows like 2020, of which you are a staple, and 60 Minutes? Why have those shows stayed the course?
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, 40 plus years here at ABC, and I wasn't here all 40 plus years. I just want to make that clear. Yeah, I think we just have to adapt and change and just sort of pay attention to what's happening out there. You know, we've sort of settled into a true crime drama, which seems to work for us with viewers. Of course, you know, some of the other shows do other things. But I think just paying attention, staying up with it, you know, different streaming platforms, we've got to just sort of meet the viewers where they are. And we're trying to keep doing that and keep bringing fresh, interesting, hopefully thought-provoking stories your way.
Well, thank you, Deborah Roberts. And congratulations on a great career that includes a Peabody. We're back tomorrow.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Our pleasure and honor. Back tomorrow, same time, same place. Stay safe and stay tuned.